At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits started just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com.
Yeah, and he definitely took it hard because he didn't show up for the prize giving ceremony, but also he's not playing the World Cup either.
I do want to play, but it's also a tournament where if you actually are happy with the final result, that means that you spent a month there.
Speaking of Faustino Oro, I believe the youngest 2500, at least on live ratings, he's not even 12. He's going to be a grandmaster. Does he have how many norms?
Well, he will
be. Did he complete it?
Yeah.
Okay.
This was. But he will. Obviously, he will be. The question is when.
Boom. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the C-Squared Podcast. It's been a while since our last one. A lot of things have happened. We've learned the names of the next two candidates in line that qualified from the Grand Suisse. Some records were broken as well. We have the youngest, I believe, 2500 perhaps in history. That is Faustino Oro. We'll talk about him and what he achieved in just a second as well. And the Grand Chess Tour, we'll touch upon that also and perhaps other topics as well. But Fabi, you're in Brazil right now. We should start, however, with the Grand Suisse and with the fact that you predicted well. Anish and Bluebaum did make it after the last round. Anish defeated Hans. Huge game. We'll analyze that, in fact, in your next masterclass, Fabiano's masterclass. And, of course, Bluebaum managed to defend with the white pieces. Sounds funny against Alireza, but he managed to defend and he made it. So I would say quite surprising. I mean, look, not going into the last one, perhaps, but overall, Anish and Bluebaum, yeah, those are two names that were not on my bingo card.
Yeah, I mean,
Anish, okay, perhaps, before, yes, obviously, yeah. Bluebaum is a huge surprise.
Before the last round, it was not too shocking. I mean, the prediction was pretty in line with what you would probably see from any like model would probably predict that those were, you know, with some degree of risk, the most probable top two, but it was still wide open. And okay, Vincent could have won his game. He had good winning chances. I mean, it was close.
That was a good game. Yes.
I definitely wouldn't say Anish is a surprise. Okay. He's played the candidates twice before. The first time I played the candidates, he did 2016, kind of famously where all the draw jokes started from. I think it's a bit unfair, you know, the draw jokes, but okay. He did draw his games. In the 2016 candidates, which is not a bad result. It's fine. You know, it's not easy to remain undefeated in the candidates. In 2021, he had a good result. Of course, it wasn't really close to winning, but still, if you look at it, not from the point of view of like a must-win tournament, then it was a pretty good result. 2021, I also played that year. That was the year that Jan Nepomniachtchi won. I think Anish did have theoretical chances to win the tournament until the penultimate round when he lost to Alexander Grishuk, and it wasn't a must-win situation. He had to beat Grishuk with black. He played the Bogo Indian. Didn't work out. Not too surprising because winning with black is a huge challenge. But anyway, I don't see that as a surprise. Anish is, you know, he might even say himself that he's not in his best years, right?
I think right now he's starting to get back to that. Obviously, he's had a slump. He's went from 2,800 to 2,730, I guess, at some point. Maybe 2,720 was his lowest. But right now, he's getting back into it. It seems like he's able to once again find his groove and win important games, which I think it all comes down to. He won a few matches. He seems to be getting, or at least having right now, Hans's number.
Yeah, no, that last game was critical. I mean, I think we can, you know, when we talk about the peak ratings of players, we also have to discuss the slight, or even more than slight deflation that's happened in general in chess ratings. And so, okay, he was, you know, around 2,800. If we go back 10 years ago, everyone was rather higher rated. And he is, I think, in a pretty good position. If you compare to last year, he's number 7 in the world now, 2760 more or less. After the Singfield Cup last year, where I think he finished -3, he was probably not, you know, not too happy with his play. And obviously in the last year, things have started to look much better for him. So that's not a surprise. Of course, the surprise is Bluebaum. It is a surprise. You can't call it anything else. I mean, he's a good player, but to consider him one of the favorites to get top 2, certainly not. Certainly, there's a chance, but it would be a low one. But I watched his video where on Chess Base India, where he discussed his most of his games in some depth, and he had a very stable tournament. It really came down to this penultimate game against Vincent. You know, Vincent can look back on that game with a, I would say, definitely
degree
some
of regret. Yeah.
I mean, he blundered Nxg3. It's just a one move blunder. It was a technically winning position, and even if it wasn't easily winning, it's still practically like you expect that. Usually, things fall apart for the weaker side in this end game because it's rook knight against rook knight, 3-2 with split pawns. These split pawns are really unfortunate, and if he hadn't blundered Nxg3, he would have won most likely. He would have qualified most likely. So that penultimate round changed everything. Bluebaum was, he had an excellent start, and then his task near the end was just hold on, which he did, but it was a close one. Those last two games, even against Alireza, he wasn't in objective danger, but it was...
He was in practical danger. Were you surprised to see Alireza start with Dutch? Definitely not something that was on my radar. Obviously, we discussed before the game started, we sort of assumed maybe the King's Indian, but the Dutch was somewhat of a surprise.
Well, this is a question. How do you play for a win with Black against a very strong player, especially one who is potentially quite happy with the draw? The King's Indian is one of those natural choices, but if you play the King's Indian, if it's not a surprise, I mean, what do you do? Your opponent can just play D takes E5 on move whatever it is, like E5, D takes E5, and it's just a forced draw. So you can't play E5 lines. Then you're playing very... very dubious King's Indian lines if you're not playing with E4. So, I mean, if white plays like classical knight F3, bishop B2, so you can't play the King's Indian. It's very difficult. You can play some E6, B6 stuff, but against someone who's very well prepared, like Matthias Bluebaum is, who knows his openings very well. I think Prague did choose something interesting to play for a win against him. He chose something involving, what was the opening? It was with D4, E6, and then C4, bishop B4, knight C3, and then he played like F5, I think. Something like this. But, you know, this was also a different situation in the tournament. Bluebaum was at that point maybe not happy with single-mindedly looking for a draw. That's why he played knight C3. He could have played bishop D2, which are very drawish positions as well. So it's just a huge challenge. I mean, the Dutch, if you consider it a must-win game, and I think Alireza probably did, because he probably felt like someone's going to win, and it was a correct assumption. It could have been Anish, it could have been Vincent, it could have been Arjun, or it could have been some of the, like Misha, for example, just something like that, which happens. And he wanted to take fate in his own hands. It was a correct decision. He didn't get chances. I don't think Alireza can look back on the tournament and feel like he missed something. I mean, he had a good tournament, and he fought hard. And he had a very good performance. The one regret was, I guess, his third round loss, but even after that, he won a lot of important games. Just didn't work out in the last two rounds when he had to win one of the games. It's just a very unforgiving format.
Yeah, and he definitely took it hard because he didn't show up for the prize giving ceremony, but also, and I think that kind of segues into our next discussion, like he's not playing the World Cup either, which would be pretty much the final path for him to be able to qualify the candidates. He's not making it by rating, he's not making it by the FIDE Grand Prix points, so the World Cup would have been the final chance. He's not on the list. He's not playing the World Cup, which was somewhat of a shocker, obviously. What do you think drove him into that decision? You think psychological?
No,
you think he's just burned out after this one, put everything he had into trying to qualify via the Grand Swiss, or he just doesn't believe in the system in the World Cup?
I don't know, because I think the Grand Swiss it's one of those, like, you have a small percentage to qualify in various ways. You just try your luck here and then you try your luck there. It's his chance of getting top two in the Grand Swiss was not high. It's not high for anyone. So he had a performance where he gained 8 rating points. If you gain 8 rating points and you don't make it, you can't think I did badly. Just things didn't work out in one or two slightly pivotal moments. You move on to the World Cup. I think that's so. I don't know his reasons, but I wouldn't, if I were in his shoes, I wouldn't think, okay, Grand Swiss was a disaster and now we give up. You know, I would just say, okay.
It is a shocking statement by Alireza not playing the World Cup. Like, this is obviously the World Championship match, the candidates being the one step before the World Championship match. I mean, this is something that every single player dreams about. And every single player usually maximizes their chances to try to get to those final two stages. Him just willingly saying, you know what, I don't want to play the World Cup. I don't want to maybe spend a month in India. It's somewhat of a statement, and we don't know exactly what prompted him to do that, but it is a strange decision, I have to say. Not completely surprising. I mean, we're sort of becoming accustomed to see that from Alireza, sometimes refusing to play in certain events. He has his own ideas, and he has his own, I guess, decision-making tools that he uses. But yeah, surprising.
Personally, I would rather take my chance in the World Cup, because I think, okay, you know, I should get past the first two matches, and you have to get top three, you have to win 6 out of 7 matches, right?
Yeah.
Or 7 out of 7 if you want to win the whole thing. But 6 out of 7 will do it. You'll get top three. So then I'm going to start playing top players. Some of them, let's say, I'll have around a 50% chance. Some maybe a slightly more than 50% chance. Definitely not easy. But in the Grand Swiss, I'm going to have to win a ton of games, and then it'll come down to tie breaks. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll perform above my rating and still might not make it because maybe some tie breaks didn't work out. That's the nature of this Grand Swiss. Is it's like you can do great and just things don't work out. In the World Cup, if you do great, things will probably work out.
Yeah.
Because it usually comes down to you. Like, you have direct matches. If you lose a match, then you just played worse than your opponent. You know, if you play at a higher than 2800 level consistently, you're probably going to make it to the end.
Yeah.
But it's also unforgiving. It can come down to random rapid games. Like last time when I qualified through the World Cup, I almost got knocked out in the third round against Yilmaz Mustafa, who's 2650. He's a strong player. But, you know, that would have been early exit. Hikaru got knocked out by Prague early on, fourth round, I think.
Yeah.
It's a brutal format, but I would still take my chance here. Because at least if you get to the top four, like if you get to the semifinals, you still have two lives. That's nice.
Yeah.
Top three make it, right?
Yeah.
That's a bit of a respite in some sense.
Going into the World Cup, we do see some familiar names trying to qualify, trying to make it. Is going to be so, so contested. Anish is playing. Somewhat surprising, but I guess he just wants to keep
the
train going.
The reason why is because he had signed the contract beforehand, most likely.
You think so?
That's what happened with me when I qualified to the World Cup and I played the Grand Swiss because I had already qualified.
Could be.
I had signed the contract. And like,
it's also a tournament.
Although I don't know for sure.
A lot of people just want to play. I mean,
yeah,
it is a
could
fun
also
event.
Be. For me, I decided to skip because my October is booked. Grand Chess Tour, US Championship. I have the Checkmate USA versus India match on October 4th. December is packed. It's freestyle. It's the global.
Yeah, November is basically the only free month.
Yeah. I just need a little bit of, I mean, if I bounce around like this, you know, going from continent to continent, I go to Africa, go to India, go to Africa, go back to India, go to Doha. I mean, it's a little bit of a crazy schedule, yeah?
It is.
I do want to play, but it's also a tournament where if you actually are happy with the final result, that means that you spent a month there. So it's like, you know, either you feel disappointed or you spend the entire month in the tournament.
It's brutal. It's brutal. We do see some familiar names, but also somewhat of a surprise. See, Lecco is playing. Good to see him back into
really?
The fray. Yeah,
Peter Lecco. Oh my God.
Peter Lecco is there. Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool.
He's a cool name to see for sure. I'm trying to look through, of course, the youngsters at this Gurel, the new ones as well, Erdogmus, who is quite high rated nowadays. The legend Ivanchuk is also playing. Bobby Cheng from Austria. Okay, this is a name that I did not
Bobby Cheng plays
to
from
see.
Austria? You mean Australia, right?
Australia, sorry, not Austria. Australia.
Okay, I was like, what?
No, no,
what
Bobby
happened?
Cheng. Yes.
Austria.
Let's see. I'm just looking at the list right now. And who are our wild cards? Divya, I think that was announced last. Divya, who also played at the Grand Swiss, and she played quite well. In fact, I don't think she lost a lot of games, made a bunch of draws, one of few. So definitely a very decent result. And the youngsters, Abhimanyu and the American youngsters, and Woodward, who impressed at the Grand Swiss. They're part
Faustino
of the wild
is playing,
cards
I think.
As well.
Faustino,
yes. Yes, yes. So lots of youngsters, that's for sure. And that's going to make it very interesting. Speaking of Faustino Oro, I believe the youngest 2500, at least on live ratings. He's not even 12. He's going to be a grandmaster. I think he's going to be a grandmaster. I don't know. Does he have how many norms?
Well, he will
he complete
be.
It? He completed
no, no, he...
it, right?
No, no, he didn't. He made one, just one.
This was just one. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. This was.
But
just
he will
one.
Obviously. He will be. The question is when.
The question I is mean, when. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Will he be before he's... Mishra? I guess is the question.
Oh yeah, there's that. Well, I mean, this stuff, like the youngest ever does, I never found so interesting. I mean, and I
you
know
followed
it's,
his
I,
games, right? You followed his
you know,
games
I did,
from these legends versus up and coming youngsters. Did he? What impresses you the most about his style of play, his presence, his, I don't know, his confidence? Like, what's the tool that he uses the best in his games to get the results that he does, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think that he kind of, like, always stays focused, and the other players didn't. That was my feeling. Like, a lot of their mistakes were just, you can, like, I saw his penultimate round. And, you know, he was in huge trouble against the player Pedro Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
Huge trouble. I mean, he's just down two pawns in the endgame.
Yep.
Now, if he's going to lose, not a guarantee, because it's always difficult to win tactical endgames. But the guy played, I was watching the video, he played knight takes f7, which he assumed, I guess, would win a third pawn. Within like 5 seconds, but obviously there's a check on a6, and I mean, it's
which
a very,
Faustino
very...
played instantaneously.
Yeah, of course. Because
and the funny part
king...
is that the guy played king g1, or at least moved his sense towards moving the king immediately. Like he, you know, generally when you're surprised like that, you jump out of your chair. But the guy seemed like he was ready to play king g1 for whatever reason. Yeah, it was a strange moment for sure.
Yeah, I mean, well, obviously after bishop a6, there's nothing to...
It's over.
Talk about.
Well,
you lost your piece. It's
piece.
Still a dead draw, and to lose this is kind of shocking. Like, I would probably just accept a draw after if my opponent played, like, h4, puts the king on g3. There's just no way to attack g2, and you just wait. And it's, like, very, very basic, right? Just play h4, you lose your a2 pawn, okay? Put your king on g3. Put your rook on the first rank. You cannot lose g2 pawn. It can't be attacked. You know, even if there's no e4 pawn, it would be a huge challenge to win it if it's not just a draw. So, but then, okay, he played f4. It was also, like, shocking to play f4. I mean, you just weakened e4. It's like, how does your hand make this move? But okay. And then there was this moment when he played rook a3, and I was, this is probably the the most. Like, I think basically he had just shut down at that point. Just some form of like shell shock or something. I don't know. Because to play rook a3 just allows king f4, you know. I mean, you need the rook on somewhere to give a check on the f file. You can play rook a6, you just need to give a check on the f file. You can play rook a1. No, actually, rook a1, you can't play. Yes, you allow king f4 yet. But like, just don't play rook a3. Don't put your rook where it can't give a check on the f file. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there were some games that I thought were from Faustino that were quite impressive. There were some messy games. Yeah, I thought how he beat Pichot, because Pichot is a very good player.
Very strong.
You know, if we're talking about the most challenging players in the tournament, probably I would say Pichot, because Grande is, I mean, okay, he was like a top player. I've played him many times. He's a tremendous player, but he's kind of inactive these days. He's not the most active player, so.
Yeah, of course. So he's Pichot, like me.
Yeah, well, also,
I might actually be much more retired than Granda. Also, he's
plus 30 years, but yeah.
Yes, plus 30 years and probably plus 100 extra rating points at his peak.
Yeah, I think, well, no, at his current, he's about 100 points higher.
Well, also at his peak, like compared to peak, like my 2570, well, he was.
I played Granda a few times. I played him when I was young in Spain in the tournament organized by the Magic Chess Club. I think they still have a chess club, but they don't organize tournaments. It was in places in Extremadura, Zafra, Merida, some fun tournaments. I played him there. Then I played a World Cup match against him quite late in the tournament. He had beaten Peter Lako. He had beaten Anish Giri in the World Cup. Then he plays me. We play the first round. I play the Scotch. He's surprised. He gets a bad position, collapses early on. And then he just tells me that he's like absolutely exhausted at this point in the tournament. because he had gotten so far, like he had already beaten two top players, Anish and Peter Lako. But yeah, it's of course at his peak he was a top player. But
Granda
yeah,
is a very interesting guy, right? Because the rumors, or at least the legend surrounding him, is that he never studied chess. Like we generally study chess with books and with computers. Like he basically just, he's an autodidact, and he just like taught himself chess and I guess got better through experience. Those are obviously the legends. And he's also supposedly just like a farmer. Is that?
No, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Like his main occupation, I thought.
Yeah, I really don't know.
Rumors that he's just a farmer.
I really don't know. But I can't believe that he didn't study chess very methodically.
Yeah.
Books he's probably read. But okay, there was this game between Faustino and Pichot and team. He plays rook c1, which is not even the best move, but it's a nice trick. So he was very tricky. I mean, I'm sure he had seen that rook a2 runs in, although maybe not, because there's also bishop c6, but I think he had probably seen that rook a2 runs into rook b1, which was the trap. Mm-hmm. And I think Pichot was just counting on bishop d6, and rook b1 is just game over. It was a nice trap. You know, he's still a young player.
Really?
But for his age, I mean, to be beating grandmasters, to be fighting for the win in tournaments, he even won this tournament, is like he's only 11. It's very
yeah, it's
young.
Crazy. For me, the most impressive is his confidence. The fact that, you know, generally at this age, you see players, even if they're extremely good, have some reservations about their talent, about their strength. He doesn't seem to be holding any of that. Like he really is confident. He believes that he's going to beat these guys and that he's probably going to be one of the best players at some point. So he internalized, or at least it feels like he internalized that expectation, and he's using it in his favor. Like it doesn't weigh on him as much as it could on other players, which yeah, is I, obviously I something
kids,
that, you know,
kids are usually like this. Yeah,
kids don't care. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, yeah. It's I mean, kids can be funny. Yeah, they definitely don't often have like a strong grasp on reality, which is normal, and this could lead to a lot of optimism, which is very good.
Yes,
right, which is actually a very good thing. So
it is.
Sometimes your like inexperience in worldly things can actually help you.
Cool. All right. So we talked about that. Now, finally, let's talk about the tournament that's starting in a couple of days from now. Big event happening in Sao Paulo, Brazil. The Grand Chess Tour Finals returning after quite a few years. I think it's been 7 years. 2018 was perhaps the last time that a final was played in London. That was immediately after a World Championship match. That was the final one, and now finally they're returning with the same format of having a final between the four highest placing players during their year. It's you, MVL, Levon, and who am I missing?
Prague.
Beautiful. Prague. There we go. Expectations. How's the atmosphere? You've been there for a grand total of a few hours. So,
yeah, 10 hours or so, 12 hours. Yeah, it's actually 13
years. How are you
feeling
also?
13 years since I've been here in Sao Paulo. It's a long time. I played the 2012 Grand Slam. It was called not Grand Chess Tour, but Grand Slam. Split between Sao Paulo and Bilbao. So we played 1 week here, 5 games, then moved to Spain, took a week break in between the tournament, played another 5 games. I shared first place with Magnus, I think 6.5 out of 10 points. I beat him in the first round, and he beat me in the sixth round, unfortunately. He won a very pivotal game. He beat me in the blitz tiebreak, but it was a very good result. I had a really nice game against Levon in the penultimate round. I won one of my favorite games against Sergei Karjakin with black in the Archangel variation of Rui Lopez. If you go to like my Archangel course on Chess World, they put the diagram because I sacrificed 2 exchanges. It was a nice game against Sergei. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun Final Four, I think. Very, very tough. You know, everyone has been played actively except for me. All of them played the Grand Swiss. None of them did too well. I guess Maxime did fine, but Prague had a poor tournament, and Levon had a very poor tournament.
Horrendous, yeah, horrendous. Yeah. After a series of very good events, this was not it for him.
Yeah, very disappointing for him, I'm sure. But, you know, it's a new tournament. Things change week by week, so I think it's going to be a very close one. I play Levon in the first round, and our match, the winner and loser will play the winner loser of Prague versus Maxime, which I'm, you know, just looking forward to it. I'm quite excited to play a match against Levon again. We've played many, so I've already talked about that, how many we've played.
It's a player you know so well, yeah? And it's somewhat of a friend as well, especially after joining the ranks of the American Federation. He's a compatriot right now. He's a player that you've shared a lot of secrets with. Chess secrets, of course. I'm not talking about any other secrets. But yeah, should be an interesting one. I will be doing commentary as well on the St. Louis Chess Club YouTube. That's basically the main channel where you will be able to find it. The action starts on September 28th, I believe at 3 p.m. Brazil time. Am I correct?
I believe that's correct. I believe so.
3 p.m. Brazil time, 1 p.m. Central time in the United States. So tune in to the St. Louis Chess Club's YouTube channel. That's where all the action is going to be. I'm excited. It should be a lot of fun. Especially I'm excited about the format, combining classical, rapid, and blitz. So should be fun. Should definitely be a lot of fun. Cool. Fabi, thanks a lot for joining from Brazil. Thanks a lot for taking the time, and good luck in the proceedings. Do well. Try to win it and win the grand finals.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com apply.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.